All right, welcome back, everyone, to Straight Cast Into the Great Wide Opens. I'm your co-host, Jamie Bruce, and with me, as always, the beautiful Brad Leitner. How we doing, Block?
Oh, we're doing great, buddy. Just doing a little recouping from the 20-day grind.
Yeah, it was something else. I'm not really feeling it till right now, but we've got a good show lined up tonight. We've got Randy Blokett in the green room. Kyle Patrick as well. We're going to talk points race a little bit. We're going to talk some controversial issues that are usually accompanied with Randy. So it's going to be a good show. We're, you know, going to get a look at something a lot of people don't see, and that's an interview with Randy. So it's going to be good. And let's talk about these last couple derbies, bud. We had Watts Bar, Tennessee. Congrats to Tyler Williams. And what do you think, bud?
Watts Bar was, I was expecting a real, real big shithole when we got there, and it didn't let me down, but I actually didn't mind fishing there. I just kind of messed up my practice, which led into messing up a tournament, but there's lots of grass. That lake probably has some of the best grass in the country. I mean, actual milfoil, which you don't see too often anymore. So that was a lot of fun fishing. I know it was a struggle catching keepers, though. I mean, I was catching 30 to 50 fish a day, but you'd only get 3 to 5 keepers a day. So congrats to the guys who figured out how to get the keepers. And I also got busted trying. I had like a line burner the first day, and man, that guy at the bass tank, he's pretty much like a drill sergeant up there. He got me.
No, he had enough of you Googans trying to squeak shorts by. Don't worry, I got busted at Ozarks by him. Had a little shrinkage on one.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. You measure him before you throw him in the live well, and it seemed to shrink up just a tiny little bit on you. Or maybe you're just excited when you're measuring it. Who knows?
But I think that's what happens, because I fish walleye tournaments where you're not allowed to keep any over 18 inches. And guys say the same things. He grew. I guess just you get fired up. You don't do the proper procedure with the jaw closed and everything like that. But congrats to Tyler Williams there. That guy's a beauty. I've talked to him a couple times, and super fun guy, easy to get along with, and a well-deserved win.
He's on a heater too. He won that one and top 10 Ozarks. I mean, is he in the top 10 right now? Or
yeah, he's in ninth. He whipped, I think he was down in 27th, and he's battled his way up to ninth. He's made up like 120 points or something crazy like that. JT, John, Trey, Robert G's damn near solidified by now. Kent has been slipping a little, but he's still in fifth. And by like slipping for him means getting 50th. You know, he's obviously, hopefully he stays in that points race and keeps making us all look bad. But Kyle Patrick made a huge jump. Logan Parks has been hunting it all season. Kyle Austin's been a sleeper, man. He's up in eighth now. I looked at his stats today and I was super impressed. He has not had a single top 20 all year. He's made like 5 or 6 checks, and his lowest finish is 70th. So, you know, he is playing that points game as well as anyone. He's just, you know, under the radar, and he's now crept his way up to 8th place. Tyler Williams in 9th. Some fat gray Canadians in 10th.
Oh, no, that's the Canadian Sasswanch.
Sasswanch.
Yeah, that's you.
I like that handle.
Yeah, that's a good one. I feel bad for Brett Cannon. I really thought he was making a run for her there at the end, and just a miserable tournament.
Well, so he's still got a chance. We're gonna talk about it here. Wesley Gore is right behind me, literally by a point. Sam George, he's always teasing it every year in the Opens. Logan Johnson's been right there. Joey had a tough one at Watts Bar. Him, Matt Henry, and I all dropped out of the top 10 at Watts Bar, and Joey and I came back. Bobby Lane's in 15th right there. Jacob Bigelow slipped down to 16th. Milliken still got a chance, 17th. Brett Cannon's right there. He's he's right there. He's tied with Raz Daddy in 19th, and they've got about 10 points on Keith Tuma. So, I mean, realistically, probably from Tuma up, Tuma's got a way outside chance, but he's won at the Harris Chain before. Felt horrible for him at this last one because he's been so consistent, so good all year. And he's still in the top 20, but I think it's pretty safe to say that it's narrowed down to 20, and man, it's tight there. It's going to be interesting. Like, being in the race is just as fun as watching it. Like, I like being there watching it in real time. Yeah. Just as a bass fishing nerd. But yeah, that's enough about Watts Bar.
Yeah, no doubt. What I can't believe going into this year, we all thought it was going to be a little different point race. What I can't believe, these guys like Tuma and Cannon and a bunch of guys who slipped up a little bit these last two, how consistent they were and how one tournament can just beat you down to nothing. Like, it is really, the guys in the top 10 this year, top 20, we'll say, have been smashing it all year. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had two bombs. I had a 104 and a 122, and
just you've had two top fives or top eights, right? Or so that kind of evens you out quite a bit.
Yeah, so you can be that, you know, that volatile and still survive as long as you can get your ass back up. That's the hardest part. But I think it helped me slipping down to 20th after Watts, because I could just go into Ozark with, you know, a no care swinging forward attitude. And if I would have went in trying to maintain points, it wouldn't have gone very well.
Yeah, I don't think you can like fish it for points. You got to be swinging as hard as you can. I never knew you were such a good dock skipper until I watched you the other day.
You could hear me ringing them bastards from a mile away with that big jig.
I thought you were scaring the snakes out from under the dock. I didn't know what you were doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, just proven versatility, Brad. You keep bugging me about being a live scoper, so.
You are the best there is at live scope. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, come on, bud. Let's get real here. Hang on to your live scope comments for Randy coming up.
I don't want to get Randy fired up at live scope.
Yeah, well, it's going to happen at some point for sure. But yeah, having that Fox Sports and all the coverage now on the points race is pretty badass. Like, it's cool, right?
It is definitely cool. I mean, to be right in the middle of it like you are, I mean, that has to be a dream come true, I would think.
No, I don't even mean that. I just mean like watching it. Like, it's, you know, they've never really had this much hype and coverage on the points race before. And like, everyone in fishing is paying at least a little bit attention to it, it seems like.
Everyone is. The elites are over. MLF's pretty much over with. There's a few Toyotas left maybe. So, you know, it's the biggest game going right now. So people still love to watch bass fishing. So
yeah, October makes it cool too. Or September, like, I don't know, it seems like a bunch of fish are spread. I've never been down there that time of year, any time of year really. But it just makes it cool. Like, you had Ish and Bobby, you know, doing the old school game at Watts Bar, and it's, you know, it's fun to watch, it's fun to be a part of, and yeah, it's pretty sweet being on FS1, as you know.
Absolutely changes your fishing career, I know that.
Yeah, even if you catch 6 pounds or whatever I had on the last day after penalties.
I think I had like 14 on Thousand Island, so you probably had a better day than I did.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, we're not going to make Randy sweat it too much longer here. I think we better just put the poles down, fill up your tin cup, and we got Randy Blokit coming up next.
Oh, it's going to be good.
There's a moment when you're faced with a challenge, and just solving the problem isn't good enough. Even if that means breaking the rules and shredding apart conventional ways of thinking, all in the name of creating something truly remarkable. With this much control at its command, we didn't stop with just one. We created two incredible trolling motors. Introducing the new PowerPole Move Brushless Trolling Motor. This is the mountain, and this is Mountain Whiskey. Unspoiled, untamed, forever wild.
there's no safety net, no way down. Up here, it's just man and the mountain and his tin cup. Tin cup whiskey. Mountain whiskey.
How we doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing, man?
Oh, we're doing great. We're doing great. We know you got a derby coming up, so we want to thank you for making the time to hop on. We know you're a busy man, and
no problem, man.
Appreciate it.
Driving back and forth. I got that Toyota series tomorrow, Lake of the Ozarks, and driving back and forth from Springfield. So a lot of early mornings here.
Yeah. Yeah. It must be tough getting to a derby on your home lake.
Well, it's not really much. It's in Missouri, but it's an hour and a half drive up there, but it's better than a little too close to stay in a hotel. And, you know, so it's just better staying at home on this one.
Yeah, I hear you. We got a travel partner that usually books houses about an hour and a half away. So we got to deal with the same damn thing. But yeah, Randy, Brad and I were talking earlier. We're both old school bass fans. So, I mean, it is pretty cool having you on the show here. You know, we appreciate it. We were talking earlier about your Bugs Island W. You know, having gone there this year, you're the Bugs Island legend. Brad even tried pulling the plug out of his boat, but it didn't work for him.
You guys had a tournament there, Bugs?
Yeah, there was an open there.
Oh, was there? There's been so many opens. I lost track of where all of them were. When was that one? What?
It was in like May or something.
Okay, yeah.
June or May, long time ago.
Yeah, that was a cool place. Tell us about that a little bit.
It was just, I sort of lucked out in that tournament with the weather because there was it was an October tournament, and there was just happened to be a hurricane that came up the East Coast there during the week or 2 weeks before a tournament there, and it flooded out Bugs Island. I mean, normally you don't get high water in October in any lake, and I didn't know anything about the place, so the first day of the practice, the water was dropping super fast, and it was probably 5 foot high when we got there, and I caught a pretty good bag on the lower end flipping bushes in practice, but the water was dropping so high that they were leaving those bushes because it was clear water and there wasn't much water in them. And I only caught like 9 pounds the first day, and I was like in middle of the pack somewhere, and I didn't have anything else to try the second day. So I said, man, I'm just going to go up the river. I've never seen it before, but I figured the water would be dirty and there might be some more shallow fish in the bushes and the dirty water. And I ran up to the back of one of those creeks. I'd never even seen it before with my paper map on my lap, you know, flasher. We didn't have GPSs back then. And I got to the back of the creek and there was this bridge, and the water, there was only like maybe, I don't know, 12 or 15 inches of water between the top of the bridge and the water. And I looked back underneath there and it was full of willow trees. I knew nobody had been back in there in 2 weeks because the water was so high, it was over the bridge sort of. So I said, man, if I can just get this boat down, you know, 6 or 8 inches, or, you know, I could probably get in there. Cause back then I had a Ranger 350, I think it was. And they sat a lot lower to the water. So I leaned over there, pulled the plug out, flooded the whole boat, took off trolling motors, cowling, everything. And my partner and I pushed with our feet on the top of the bridge and it scraping the boat, getting underneath there.
Like water over the batteries flooded?
Yeah, the water, there was water everywhere up to the seats. And when I got on the other side, I just
put
the plug back in and bilged everything out. It took like 20 minutes to bilge it out. And then I just idled back in there and started fishing. And I got on this one little stretch of willows. And in about an hour's time, I caught 24 pounds flipping a jig. Ran out of there and was leading the tournament after that second day. And then went back in there every day of the tournament. The water was dropping so hard that I didn't have to pull the plug after that second day. And actually, Danny Brower came in there. He came in there that third day, I think, of the tournament.
When it had dropped enough.
Yeah, because it dropped enough to get in there. But, it was just sort of the right place at the right time, you know.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. It's one for the books. It's, you know, it's talked about a lot, and it's a pretty damn good story.
Yeah, it's too bad there wasn't one of those, like, boat jumps. You know, you could have jumped the road and got back there. That would probably have been easier than draining the boat.
It wasn't that high, but it was but that's the thing. I mean, what are the odds of having a hurricane in October flood the lake out? So that was just a sort of a freak deal there.
Yeah, no, when she works, she works. Randy, you've been super vocal, you know, not just on your YouTube channel, but, you know, kind of throughout your whole career. But, you know, you're known as the anti-live scope guy, you know, for better or for worse. And actually last year, I don't know if you remember this, but yeah, I watch your videos. I get some entertainment value out of it. And I actually fueled the fire a little bit. I sent you one of my podcasts talking about an Opens pro who my buddy was fishing with when we were down at Lake Hartwell for the Open, whose live scope quit at 11 o'clock and he quit the tournament.
Yeah. I remember so, that one.
Yeah. So, you know, I like following along and everything. And, you know, your YouTube channel has been growing. And I told this to my buddies a couple months ago that you probably have the single fastest growing YouTube channel in bass fishing. You know,
it would be growing a lot faster, but I on my analytics, I've lost 28,000 subscribers over the past 15 months by doing the live scope videos. So yeah. Every time that I do a live scope video, I'll lose. People just get mad about it. You know that I'm dogging live scope. So that's just sort of the price you pay for it though.
Yeah. So that's fine. I mean, you got 109,000 subscribers now. So, I mean, you are, you know, you're bringing eyes to the sport that weren't on it before. So that, you know, that's for better or for worse, whether they agree with you or not, it's eyes on the sport and it does help. So we'll plug your YouTube channel. Maybe you'll get a couple extra subscribers. It's Intuitive Angling with Randy Blokett. But Randy, the reason we dragged you on here, is because of your most recent video, not your most recent, you put up about 4 a day. So I had to go back in the archives and find it, but it was the one, about the Bassmaster Opens on Lake of the Ozarks. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to play just a clip real quick, just so everyone knows what I'm talking about. If you want to watch the whole video, you can find it at Randy's YouTube channel, but we'll just pump her up here.
Sort of a wide ranging talk today, guys, on sort of the state of professional bass fishing. How it's morphed into something that's sort of unrecognizable a little bit. And then one of the reasons I wanted to do this video is you guys see the thumbnail. That's the thumbnail of the top 10 anglers at the Bassmaster Open that's going on at Lake of the Ozarks right now. And I got looking at that. Guys, I don't know any one of those who those people are on there. It's like I wouldn't know them if I saw them in Walmart or something. And I found that strange that as connected as I am to professional fishing, that there would be that many anglers like in the top 10 of a Bassmaster event that I have no clue that they are. So I sort of want to get into a broader topic on.
So we got to get your take on that, Randy, because that struck a lot of chords with a lot of guys. Myself,
yeah, there's actually two of those guys. They made comments on the things like they were mad that I didn't know who they were. And it's like, I didn't know, you know, there are so many tournaments and so many fishermen that I just have lost track. And I've heard of some names, but I can't equate the name with the face a lot of times. So when I looked at that picture, I didn't recognize anybody that was on there. That was the point of the video.
Right. But it's an open series.
Yeah. But still, the Opens used to have a lot of hammers in them. I mean, a lot of the veterans and well-known guys used to fish Opens. I guess some of them still do, but probably not as much since they divided up into the two divisions this year.
Right. And then you go on in your video, I'm not going to play it, to say, you know, you compared it to the LPGA and, well, we can play it. You got time, hey?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yeah, sure.
Okay. We're plugging your channel here.
Golf circuit has sort of went downhill a lot in recent years. Is that very thing happened with them? It's like, there got to be so many new faces in the sport that came about every single week that the fans lost interest in it because there wasn't any people that they could relate to or follow for year after year after year. There was such an influx of new people and such a turnover that their ratings just tanked because of that. And it's sort of
so we're going to see a little bit. You want to talk about that a little bit? Like maybe I'll give you a chance to explain it a little bit. Because I was sort of off here, but like a lot of people look at thumbnails, and I get it, Randy. I'm a YouTuber too. You got to clickbait it. It's part of the game. But we just want to give you a chance to break it down a little bit.
Yeah, the LPGA reference was, the ratings on that have just tanked over the past 10 years because there have been so many new faces and there was no established stars that they could tune in week after week. And as a result, the ratings went down, ad revenue went down. And I sort of equated that a little bit to not just the Bass Opens, but a lot of the AAA circuits, because there, if you look back to how many more circuits are now available, in the sport versus, 30 years ago, it is like a different universe out there. And it waters down so many different elements of the sport. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's the reality of the situation. It waters down the ability for, people to stand out. It makes it a lot more difficult to stand out. And that's why tournament performance anymore is a relative to most sponsors. It's all about social media because everybody's a tournament angler. Everybody considers themselves a pro. You got, all the MLF stuff. You got all the Bassmaster Opens, Elite Series, the Bass Pro Tour, all of their BFLs. You got NPFL. You got these regional stuff. You got local stuff. And the endemic part of the industry is simply not big enough to support that. So as a result, it has become extremely difficult to create a legitimate, solid sponsor base anymore in professional fishing compared to what it was in what I consider the golden years, which was about 1998 to 2004, where you could make some bank in the sport from sponsors. And you simply can't do that anymore. That's the evolution of the sport. It's turned into now where bass anglers, professional bass anglers, have been morphed into influencers that just happen to fish. Now, if you're a marketing manager, for any particular company out there, I don't care if it's endemic or non-endemic, you can win the Bassmaster Classic 3 years in a row and simply not create the same amount of impressions as some 25-year-old kid that's got a big social media following. And that's the change that we have seen as a result of more anglers in the sport. That's sort of in a nutshell a little bit.
So you think the door should just be closed and the elites are the elites and one or two trickle in every year? Is that kind of where you're going with this? Because I listened to it a couple times and I'm trying to wrap my head around it, and I don't totally understand it. Like what would you do if it were up to you, but just talking Bassmaster between the Opens and the elites?
Okay. In a perfect world, I would model it more after like the Major League Baseball, the NFL and that type of stuff, where you have one focused main circuit out there that basically legitimizes or defines what it is to be a professional. And, if you're a professional baseball player, you play in the major leagues. There's not 20 different offshoots of professional baseball out there. And it was like that for many years up until the FLW came along. Prior to 1997, we sort of had that a little bit. But after FLW came along, the entire game changed out there. And, you can still have, opportunities for anglers to compete. I mean, there was even back then, but as far as being defined and being a definitive professional bass angler, I just think the sport probably would have been better off in the eyes of the public and opportunities for the people that could get to that level if we had one circuit that defined it all. And you could have, different circuits out there, but they can't all just bleed into each other sort of like they are right now. Okay. And
so you think too many names dilutes it and takes away
anglers. It does dilute it. It dilutes the opportunities for the anglers, because let me give you an example here. When I started, my first year on the circuit was 1986. And it started in the fall of 85 and it went to the spring of 86. That's the way Bass used to do it. The entry fees were $600 per tournament, Bassmaster Invitationals. That was it. That was the pro circuit, the Bassmaster Invitationals. I saved up for 3 years to save up my entry fee money, mowing lawns and that type of stuff. living in my mom and dad's basement, 23 years old. And I was able to fish that circuit the first year at the tour level on that. You cannot do that now. It's physically impossible. So if I want now, if I was in the same financial situation I was when I was 24 and I wanted to be a tour level professional, you can't do it. It's physically impossible. You cannot, there's no way a 23-year-old kid can come up with $50,000 in entries, $150,000 worth of boats. And
yeah. And sorry to cut you off. We're going to get into that. I'm just talking faces in the sport. And just based on this section of your video, I got one more clip to play you. Sure. This is from Mercer's podcast. you did under a year ago.
Do you think it would have been better if they didn't change any, like if it stayed the way it was?
Well, there's a lot of things I would have changed a little bit. I think that, yeah, they need to have it three different divisions and the qualifiers need to come off of every division. But I think there should be 20 qualifiers off of each division that goes to the Elite Series. I think there's way too many people that are in the Elite Series that shouldn't be there performance-wise. And if you have that 20 angler turnover here, then you constantly have.
So, Randy, that's flying directly in the face of your last video. This is, you're saying you want 60 new faces in the Elite Series each year.
Yeah, I was. What are you talking about as far as the requalification for it? I'm talking about.
No, so that podcast was recorded. Right around the time of Bassmaster's decision to go from the three divisions to having to fish all nine to qualify.
Right.
And you said that you think it should remain three divisions, but have the top 20 from each of those divisions go to the elites to find the best anglers and the best talent.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, there's no perfect answer for it. I mean, you can theorize and debate and brainstorm on how to do it, but the bottom line, what I'm talking about is the fact that once FLW came along in 1997, it watered down all that and it made it more difficult to stand out. Now you can talk about as far as the criteria, you know, to who's in the Elite Series or who's not in the Elite Series. That's a different conversation. But when you look at the big picture on where we were like in 1995, 1994, you know, when Bassmasters were the whole Bob Cobb, the most popular period of it versus now, I think that is a lot of the reason why, you know, it's changed so much and made it more difficult to make a living in the sport.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. You know, the payouts are the same as they were back then. Yeah. And most people are just playing for each other's money. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the reality since the,
It's not just the payouts, it's the sponsorship dollars. I mean, right around 2000 or the early 2000s, there was a lot of people making six-figure incomes from sponsors alone. And I would think that is probably a pretty rare scenario now, unless you have somebody out there that's connected through some non-endemic company, which there are more opportunities to that. But there's not as many people that can say that they rely completely on the fishing industry to subsidize their tournament fishing like there was before. And like I said, that's just an evolution of more tournaments, more opportunities for anglers, more anglers out there. But I think that one of the reasons that professional bass fishing has not gained the legitimacy that it deserves is I think we fragmented ourselves. Just like I go back to this, the whole thing with, I think there just needs to be one circuit. Yeah, there's different ways to qualify for that circuit and different formats to get into there. I'm not, you know, we can talk about that in a separate conversation, but I just think that having the Bass Pro Tour, the Bassmaster Elite Series, NPFL circuit and all that type of stuff, nobody knows what a pro is anymore. What is a professional angler other than somebody just calls himself a pro angler? We don't have any type of governing, you know, body that says you're a pro angler or not. And back, you know, we tried to get this going back in the early 90s.
Sorry to cut you off, but if you make the Bassmaster Elite Series, I don't think anyone can argue that you don't have, you know, the qualifications to be there. Yeah. You have to qualify for it. It's not like the Opens where you just pay. It's not like how the FLW Tour was where you just pay. You don't get kicked out. Once you're in the elite, like you have to make your way to the elites and you have to have achieve results to stay there.
Right. But here's the thing about the elites. They bounced around so much on qualifications because in 2005, I got an invitation to fish the Bassmaster Elite Series. And I chose to stay with FLW simply because of my sponsor conflicts. I would have lost my title sponsor if I would have went to Bassmaster. And as a result, there's a lot of people that still to this day, you know, from that 2005 decision, you know, got into the Elite Series. And then Bass had some different qualification structures where they took the top three. So some guy just had three good tournaments, got in it. Sometimes they went down to 12 or 15 down the list. Then Bassmaster invited about a dozen people over that had no qualifications, have never even fished Bassmaster, just to invite them over back when that MFL split was. So there's never been one criteria to qualify when the elites. And there's also, you know, they have the legends exemptions in there. So, you know, the qualifications from that standpoint, you know, they don't have to qualify every year if you have a legends exemption. So there's never been one clear cut way to make it. It changes constantly.
Yeah.
And I think it's undermined it a little bit over the years.
Yeah. I think it's kind of planed out now. It's, you know, pretty black and white other than the legends exemptions, that there's even a point system for them now. So, you know, based on performance, it's, they can't just hang out forever.
That's sort of a gray area. I don't know how much they enforce that. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you mentioned the finances part. Your video kind of caps off with, you know, essentially calling anyone who makes it, you know, saying they don't have responsibilities, you know, independently wealthy or wealthy families, I think was the definition. So what are your thoughts there? Do you think it's just purely elitist now, or where are you coming from there?
Compared to back when I started in the 80s, it has become an elitist sport because you simply cannot do that unless you are way above the median income level. I mean, I'm not saying it's physically impossible to do that. But, okay, let's say, for example, you're a 21, 22-year-old kid that dreams about being a pro fisherman on the tour level. I'm not talking about on the other level out there. It's like, how do you get that type of income and that type of bank that it takes to compete on that level, you know, unless you have some other sources of income? And back before, you didn't have to have that. I was a perfect example. I didn't have that and was able to scratch and claw my way into it. But now it's impossible to do so. And that's why I talk about the things about LiveScope I don't like, is it creates this, you know, this financial disparity amongst anglers where some people can afford to have $20,000 worth of electronics and other guys can't. You see it out there all the time.
Well, you know? I mean, that's a difficult conversation. And, you know, when I saw your thumbnail with my face on it, I was leading the tournament at the time you put up that video. Randy, I had to quit basketball in high school. I was so poor. I'm the furthest person traveling regularly back and forth to each of these events. Okay. I'm currently sitting in 10th overall. I had to work my ass off. I had to win local tournaments, squirrel that money away, keep working, grinding, doing the YouTube thing, podcasts, everything. You just add work and it is achievable. You know, I'm not saying that it's achievable for me, but you don't have to look very far. 2021 Bassmaster Angler of the Year, Seth Fider, broke his shit, living on a couch, almost ready to quit, wins AOI, and now he's got a cult following. He's a staple in the sport. Gussie, Bassmaster Classic champion. I worked with Gussie's dad at the jail not very long ago. We had the same paychecks. He didn't get his way paid. He worked. Brandon Palahniuk used to live in a trailer. Kyle Welcher was on the list to go to nursing school. Gerald Swindle used to pound nails together. Matt Robertson, Brad's literally sitting in his trailer right now. All these guys made it. They're the single most relatable anglers in the sport because they came from that background. So in your video, you're discouraging anyone unless they have family money. You're saying, you outright say it, do not pursue this.
I think that's an exception to the rule. I think
I just listed eight of them that I just came up with.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm not saying it can't be done, but what are their expenses now? I mean, on the Elite Series. I mean, if you sat and calculated what your annual expenses are to fish, plus your what it costs you to live at home, you know, what are you talking about there? What, how much money is that?
Randy, they wouldn't be doing it if they were losing money. They're doing fine. Maybe it's changed where you don't just have to fish up or show up and fish just purely six tournaments a year. And that's your whole job. Like you've got to, you know, do seminars and shows and everything that comes along with it now. And so you should, it's your full-time job.
I'm not saying that you can't do it. What I'm saying is the reason I discourage it.
You just said it was impossible.
I didn't say it was. Yeah, it is impossible to fish at the tour level unless you have money. Where are you going to get $50,000 worth of entry fees? You fish those tournaments and then you got to come up with another $50,000 at the end of the year.
Born to be a professional angler, if you should be at that level, you're going to make some money fishing tournaments. If you don't, you should not be at that level for an extended period of time. You've made an entire career, a 30 plus year career as a professional angler, and you're always taking shots at the industry and at the layout when, you know, you've done it, you've achieved it without banger results.
That's not the point we're talking about here, because the way that I did it was not the same as it is now. I didn't do it in 2023. I mean, the entry fees were far less, the expenses were less, the payouts were greater, the opportunities for the anglers were greater. What I'm saying now is in 2023, it is extremely difficult to do what so many anglers did back from about 1989 to 2000. The opportunities are just not there.
It should be extremely difficult to fish for a living.
No, but how old were you back in 1995?
Six.
See, you did not, that you're from a different generation.
I grew up fishing in 1995. I started in 95.
Okay. In what circuit? What were you fishing?
I was just fishing local, and then I had to stay home and work because I had two kids, and now I'm chasing it. But I think what you're trying to prove is, I mean, back in 95, there was a fraction of the anglers there are now. Obviously, there's going to be more money to be paid out. And fishing was fairly, back then, like tournament angling was a big deal, where now it's kind of diluted in some aspects of it. But part of our job as anglers is to grow the sport, and it has been growing and getting bigger. Obviously, the money is not as easy to come by, but there's a lot more people taking out of the pot, which is unfortunate, but I mean, to tell kids that they shouldn't chase their dreams, that's kind of...
Well, I'll give you one example. I had this one kid that has been communicating with me on and off for the past couple of years. He's 18 years old, lives in North Carolina, from a single family parent. He lives with his mom. His dad left his parents when he was little. All the dude wants to do is become a pro angler. I mean, that's it. That's all he wants to do. But he just doesn't think he ever can. He just doesn't have the resources to do it. They do not have the money even to have a boat out there. So you got a kid like that that is just ate up with it and dreams about it. And then you have some other individual that I'm not taking anything away from them that has the financial resources and has all the opportunities presented to them where they don't have a financial distraction. That is what creates this unlevel playing field that we're talking about. Which shouldn't be, because if you were a professional basketball player or a baseball player,
you have to have money to get there.
Can you imagine say, oh, you can't, I don't care, you know, if you can hit a ball, you know, 375, you know, feet, you know, you don't have the money to do it. So that's one of the things that sort of messed up about our sport is just the financial disparity end of it. I see it all the time. I have people messaging me all the time. How do I get sponsors? How do I get into the sport? I can't do it. I don't have any money all the time.
Get to work.
Get a job.
Nobody handed us, like, no one said, hey, have at her. Here, like, I don't think an 18-year-old should have an opportunity to try to fish for a living. Like, okay. Well, you have to prove yourself at home, accrue your tournament earnings. If you're not winning enough in tournaments to give you a boost, then you shouldn't be going there anyway.
Okay.
So, this 18-year-old kid clicks on one of your videos and then just throws his damn ugly stick in the creek.
Now, let me clarify this a little bit. Did you happen to see that example I used at the Bassmaster Open at Lake Livingston 3 years ago about the two people I saw at the ramp there?
No.
This is the perfect example of what I'm talking about. And everything we've just discussed sort of boils down to this one situation. I was pulling the boat out there at the Bassmaster Open, and I pulled up on top of the ramp, and this truck pulled up in front of me. It was this tricked out brand new Ford F-250 diesel. It looked like it come right off the showroom. It had all the aftermarket tires, lift kit, you know, the Iron Cross bumpers, all that type of stuff. Brand new Ranger Z521, 5 grafts on it, not a scratch anywhere on it. And this probably 18-year-old kid walks out of it, and that was his rig, you know. And then I pull up into the campground right around it, and there's another guy in there. He's probably in his early 20s. He's got like this beat up truck that looks like a 1995 model. He's got like some Challenger bass boat with like a 5-inch graph on it. He was in the tournament too. This is what I'm talking about. This sport has got that there's it discriminates financially as far as the opportunity that presents. And I'm not saying you can't do it, because if you're willing to give up everything, if you're willing to sacrifice relationships, not have all the responsibilities that come with normal people, and you want to, you know, just live like a hermit, you can do it. I'm not saying you can't, but it is not as easy to not this right now to do that as it was when I did it in there. And I'm just saying that's the reality of the situation. And I just don't like it, because there's a lot of people that just cannot do it like they did before.
Yeah. But you're also saying that many people shouldn't be able to do it, because at the top level, it's unrecognizable. So if every 18-year-old with a 95 and a Challenger bass boat could make it, then there's going to be 20,000 people that you can't, you know, you really won't recognize anyone now.
Well, and that's the point of what we're talking about. It's like, there's no, it goes back to this whole thing. There's no clear-cut criteria what a pro angler is in order for them to develop a stable of a worthy sponsors that they should have. I mean, if you're a professional angler and you've reached the top level of sport, I mean, you should be compensated for that. And it was at one point. It's not like that anymore.
Well, and I'll use you as an example. You know, maybe there's a 19-year-old that needs sponsor deals, but the marketing budget's tied up because they've got a YouTuber. Hasn't fished a FLW or a national tour trail since 2019. And you've got the budget tied up, and they're sitting there with their 95 and can't afford entry fees. It's an imperfect system. But, and Randy, I can handle your live scope videos. I can listen to them all day long. I eat that up. But when you go out of your way to straight up tell the future generation of this sport, if you're not rich, you can't fish.
No, did you hear? You missed the point, the last part of my video.
Well, that's why we've got you on here, because I'm really trying to make sense of it.
At the very end of the video, I clarified it and said, it's not impossible. I said, if you're willing to do this, that, and I listed the sacrifices you had to make. Yeah, you can make.
You said you can't have a mortgage, you can't have a family, you can't have a wife, and you have to come from family money or whatever. I've got all those things, Randy.
No, I said if you listen back to it, it says if you want to make it and you do not have the resources to do that, you basically have to be willing to have no social life, no girlfriend, no wife. You know, live in your truck. I mean, all this stuff that you got to scrimp and scrape by, and most people don't want to do that.
Well, then they don't belong, though. I mean, that's how it works. Like, you got to sacrifice if you want something.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that it can't be done, but what I'm saying is that it's not like it was before as far as the opportunities that existed out there.
Overall. I don't think it'll ever be like it was before. You did grow up in the golden age of it, and the rest of us are trying to get by now.
I mean,
if we keep looking at the past, we might as well be Amish, for God's sake.
Well, ultimately what it is the competition has made it where the people that are able to sustain it year after year after year do have financial safety nets. Because even though, take for example.
Or they catch them.
Well, no. Yeah,
that's the difference maker.
But here's the problem.
Catching bass fixes your problems.
You might get on a roll. Somebody like you're talking about may, struggle. They got to be able to fish at whatever level. But they are literally one or two seasons away from getting kicked out of there. Because let's say, for example, you get into the Bassmaster Elite Series and you've scraped together and you've got your entry fees in there and you've got everything taken care of. If you go for like two or three tournaments in a row without making a check, you basically have to win a tournament to actually come out where you make any type of a profit by the end of the year. So you're only one or two bad tournaments away from your career ending, even if you've worked for 6 or 7 years to get to that point. There's no security.
If you're a football player, basketball player, hockey player, and you don't perform, they kick you on the street also with no safety net. I mean, yeah. Granted, they make a ton more money when they're there, but obviously they have to perform or they're not allowed to stay either.
Well, guys, I've done this for 40 years, and I can't tell you how many broken relationships, divorces, stresses, anxiety levels, just bitterness, resentment that has come from people that tried to dive in and decided they wanted to be a professional angler without knowing the reality of the situation. And that video that I was talking about, I wanted to lay out the reality of the situation. And that's why at the end of the video, I said, if you're willing to do all this type of stuff, go for it. But you have to understand what you're coming up against. And a lot of people don't. They don't understand. If you've got a wife or a girlfriend or something, they don't understand what being away from home 150, 200 days a year is going to do to their relationship. You need to know what that is. You need to know if you have one or two bad seasons and you lose your house because of it. There's a reality in this sport that gets sugarcoated, and that's what I've tried to do is just lay it out to everybody.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. We've all seen it. That's, that's kind of the good thing about the 9-event schedule. It gives you a heads up. It's not glamorous, but I mean, you sit here and throw stones at it, but you've been doing it for over 30 years. Why didn't you just quit?
I love it. I love fishing. I love bass fishing. I love tournament fishing. I love Bassmaster. Everything that I've tried to do is like try to bring you some reality to the situation, address it or acknowledge a problem and try to figure out a solution to that problem. And I don't do this just to make people miserable or to dog Bassmaster or MLF out there. I mean, I'm opinionated. I've got some opinions that I've formed over doing this since 1984. I mean, I just try to use that format to express them. Some people love it. I got a lot of people that agree with me completely. I got people out there that think I'm an idiot over it. But that's the whole thing. If you have an opinion on anything, you're going to get criticized. You cannot be all things to all people. And the main thing I try to do in this sport is just I try to be real to people because I've done it. I've been there. I've sacrificed. I've had the blood, sweat, and tears and the frustrations and the joys and the exhilaration that comes with it. This sport will test you emotionally more than anybody can even imagine. If you live in the trenches like myself and a lot of the guys have for 30 years, you will literally experience every aspect of the human emotion available. It's going to happen. A lot of people can't handle that. They can't deal with that. So unless you're prepared for that, it's probably not something somebody wants to get into.
Yeah, but I mean, Randy, you're calling professional bass fishing the trenches. There are people trying to get there right now that have literally been in the trenches. Like one of our buddies is an ex-Marine. He was doing the opens. So when people like that, come from a more dynamic background than someone just, with dad's credit card moving on through, then yeah, it might seem like the end of the world. But to someone like myself, I've been as a correctional officer since I was 19. I've seen it all. I've had to go through everything. So it you can't really call it the trenches. Like it's bass fishing, Randy.
And it's not life or death. That's not what I'm talking about, but it is people's lives. And the thing about it is it not only affects your life, it affects everybody's life around you. That's why I mentioned in there that professional bass fishing is a very selfish occupation. It is. I mean, you're dealing with, you know, being ate up with it to a point that if you're not ate up with it, you can't compete. And when you get ate up with something and obsessed with something like you have to be in professional fishing, it is going to affect other areas of your life. And I just want people to realize that before they jump into it and lose everything they have, because I have seen it over and over again over the past 30 or 40 years. I've seen it.
Yeah. And I believe you have. I mean, we've seen it too. There's no
same lots no, of it.
Not, but there's, you know, it's a professional sport. It's not made to have a safety net. It's not made to be a constant career. It's a high level entertainment sport, and that's what it is.
It's the same thing as gambling, because professional bass fishing, it has the same type of endorphin release, and it creates the same type of emotions as losing or winning in gambling. It's an addiction that comes with that. And everybody that is a professional bass angler is addicted to that emotional rush. And sometimes that emotional rush is the negative side of it. Even though you don't like it, it still makes you feel, it makes you alive. And there's nothing out there in life that makes you feel like that. The professional fishing does, the highs and lows with performance, when you have everything on the line. If you've got everything on the line and you're at a tournament, and if you don't finish in the top 10 in that tournament, you can't make your mortgage payment or your house payment, then that is what stress is like there. And I tell you, another thing that I've noticed is, like, just over the past, when I started out, everybody stayed in flea bag motels, $20 night motels. People drove junky vehicles all the time. I don't see that anymore. Everybody I see is like staying at, you know, Comfort Inn or Holiday Inn and driving a, you know, a truck that's new or 2 or 3 years old. It wasn't like that back in the 80s and 90s. So there's been a transformation in that particular income range that allowed people to do that.
Well, that's just the world though. Like, you know, back 20 years ago, most families only used one vehicle, or 30 years ago, they used one vehicle. 12-year-old kids didn't have a $2,000 cell phone in their pocket. That's just been the progression. So to hang on to the old school and say you should be sleeping in a flea bag motel when you don't need to is a difficult comparison.
Myself. I camped out for a dozen years. That's the way to go. The best thing.
Yeah. Well, we'll move off this quick. You mentioned the live scope disparity thing. The last two tournaments we stayed with our buddy Lewis Minetti, college bracket champion, absolute beauty of a human. He won that college bracket against, you know, $100,000 rigs with every, you know, scope point in every which way. He won it his way. Seats look like they got attacked by a damn badger. No front graphs. We've been staying with him for the last couple derbies. And, you know, he's a great guy. He's a great angler. And he's facing the reality of what we're talking about now. He won the package where you could, you know, fish all year and have a truck and a boat, and next year he's not going to have that. So, you know, he's been trying to compete without forward facing sonar, and I had taken him out on the day before Ozarks. We went fishing together just to have a good time. And I told him, I said, I'll teach you everything I've ever learned and everything I know about live scope, because you will not compete against these guys without it. And when you talk about getting rid of live scope to reduce disparity between anglers, that is the opposite direction of what I've seen. Like something like that is the only reason someone can come from so far away, go to a lake that's foreign to them. Because the biggest advantage in fishing is home lake. It's not like going to someone else's golf course or something like that. You're going to their home lake. If you take someone's eyes away from them on the live scope and expect them to compete with someone out there who's been planting brush piles all year, buying waypoints, hiring guides, everything like that, you're going to see even more disparity. So I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that, because I am that person. I don't have time or money to pre-practice. I have responsibilities at home. I've never been anywhere in the U.S. fishing. The first largemouth I caught this year in U.S. competition was at Eufaula, Alabama for the first open. I'd be in last place in every tournament, not every tournament, but in a lot of them. So I really disagree with your take on that. And I'd love to hear your opinion.
Well, that's called paying your dues, because every one of us had that same learning curve. It's like when I started on the circuit, I didn't know anything about Lake Okeechobee or any other tournament like that. I had to go there for like 3 or 4 years before I finally figured out how to catch fish down there. That is the dirt time that anglers put in. And that is one of the things that if you talk to some of the older anglers out there that they have a problem with, is not basically doing that. It's not having to go through the processes as far as the learning curve. It takes time on the water in order to get where you can compete out there.
Well, you can only get time on the water with money. So if you're saying if someone saves up, they should have to go get their ass kicked for 3 or 4 years on a foreign lake. By then they're out of money. They're already going home. They're getting a job. That's it.
That's why you had back before you had older anglers competing, because most of them were guides that transformed into tournament anglers that you don't really have that much anymore.
Do you think that's best for tournaments? If someone's a guide and the schedule happens to go to their lake every year and they catch them there and then survive the rest of the year?
Well, that was just the reality of the situation. That didn't happen all the time. Yeah, the locals did dominate and do well at some tournaments, but a lot of times they didn't. I mean, you heard this thing about the local advantage is a big curse. That happened a lot back then prior to LiveScope. But I've always admired the anglers out there that, like I said, put in their time in the water, paid their dues, learned to season after season of understanding seasonal movements and seasonal patterns of fishing that took time. That's why the whole thing about, you know, the creativity and your imagination is more important than your experience and the time in the water. Because if it was nothing but experience out there, then guys like Rick Klun would still be unbeatable today. But that is the advantages a lot of people have in there that don't have that advantage in that time in the water, is just their creativity.
So what do you think happens when you're at a brand new lake? Let's take Watts Bar, for example. We were just there. No one's ever seen it before. A couple pre-practicers, whatever. A couple guys live on the TVA. So you show up, you drop your live scope at the ramp. Walk me through how you think it happens for a live scoper.
That's not even the point of the conversation, because the technicality part of
you. Oh, you're killing me, Randy.
No, it's not. I'm not saying
every time we put you in a corner, you say this isn't the conversation.
You're probably coming from the point. It's like I'm not in a corner. I'm saying a lot of people say, oh, just because you see him on live scope, you can't make him bite. Everybody would have live scope. Everybody would catch him. That's maybe true, but every freaking tournament is getting one with live scope to some extent, or 95% of them anymore. The conversation around live scope should not be centered around the fishing part of it. There's a bigger picture that most of the pro live scopers miss out on that. That's what I've been talking about on all my videos. I understand it's a great piece of technology. I understand it helps people catch fish. That's not debatable. It's all the other negatives that go with it.
I think it reduces the disparity between, people trying to make it and playing against someone who has the opportunity to pre-practice. If you took live scope away for the next tournament in the opens, we'd show up, there'd be 20 to 30 guys who had already spent 3+ weeks there, a handful other guys with a pocket full of waypoints they, you know, either obtained through buddies or
bottom
or whatever. They're going to win. Right?
Well, yeah, you can. That's an easy fix, though. You have the organizations put a longer off limits and crack down on any information gathering.
Yeah, but the off limits is only going to go so long.
Well,
you can't have it all year.
Don't the MFLs have it all? I mean, the Bass Pro Tier, isn't it all year on theirs?
That's not pre-practice. That's not off limits. That's just information.
just information.
Randy, you're playing without live scope. You're playing you're taking away from the working man, quote unquote, even more. And I'm telling you, as a working man with live scope,
that's one. You're talking about one aspect of it, but you're ignoring the bigger picture of the long term sustainability and what this looks like 10 years down the road. That is what you're saying. I understand that point in there, but that is like irrelevant in the bigger picture of the future of the sport. And that's what I'm coming from. I'm coming from the position of the future of the sport, not what is going to benefit people individually.
Okay. Well, walk us through the bigger picture, the other.
Okay. At what, for you, since you're live scope, at what point will technology gone too far? What is your precipice on that?
I had this conversation last night. I mean, it's not topped out, but I'll use a flasher as an example. We use flashers for ice fishing. The first Lowrance fish locator came out in the 80s or whenever it was. Now the highest end Markham or Vexlar or anything like that, they're a little bit nicer, but the point is still the same. A live scope is at the point where you can already see further than you can physically cast. The target separation on bottom is already almost maxed out. There's very little that can hide. And, you know, that's going to improve probably 10 to 15, maybe a little bit more percent over the next few years, to where you'll be able to definitely tell species to species. But you don't use live scope, so you're not seeing it. Fish adapt. They adapt to it. You used to catch 70% of the ones you threw at. That number just kept going down and down and down and down. And now it's just part of the game where, you know, some places you go in Texas, you might only catch 1%. So maybe like a live scope 360 or something like that will come out.
Okay. What if technology advances to some point where it can, for whatever reason, you can activate or make fish more aggressive from some type of the sonar blip? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. What point do you say we've got to cut this off? This is not fishing anymore. This is it. We've turned this into some commercial event. It's not sport fishing. For me, live scope was that point when you could actively see fish moving in front of you in real time and manipulate those fish based upon your lure movement. That was my point, where it was too much. I think everybody has a point. And if you have unregulated technology in the sport and you got all these R&D departments trying to push this technology further and further ahead on a global scale, not just in the United States. I get people sending me messages all the time from Australia about how the Murray cod population is getting devastated by live scope. On a global scale, what is that going to do to our fisheries as more people get good with this technology and as it advances? That is the picture that a lot of people don't look at there, including the tournament organizations.
Yeah,
I think the fish just
adapt to it. We do a lot of walleye fishing up here. You used to just go and catch. If you were the first guy with live scope, you could fill the bucket, and I had a legitimate concern. Same as crappies. It was like, this is going to be a bad, you know, bad thing for the fish.
Well, like, they're not adapting to it too much because every tournament still gets one on it. I mean, 95% of them. So they're not adapting too much to it.
But it's no different than throwing a 20,000 stumps throughout a tournament. Like, you only get bites on 10% of the stumps. It's just like casting at 20,000 fish. If only 10% bite it, what's the difference?
There's a huge difference. It's not even close. But what happens is, like, the way that you say you approach your tournament fishing, that you just go out and put your live scope down, is like, what about understanding the nuances of bass fishing, the migrations and the seasonal movements? And
that still happens on live scope.
It does not happen like that because you're using artificial intelligence. You're not
artificial intelligence
intimate with the fish on there. You're not having to do the same thing that was required without that technology to catch those fish, because you wouldn't even have known those fish were there to fish for them unless you saw them on the live scope.
It's no different than idling over them years ago with a flasher or a paper graph.
Yeah, but that's for one thing, that wasn't live imaging. And number two, you don't even know exactly what species they were a lot of times.
You don't with live scope either. I mean, a crappie looks just like a bass.
Okay, but back then, if that was the case and everything would have been won offshore with flashers, and it wasn't, most of the tournaments were won shallow target fishing. It didn't have the same domination back there.
But and you had half as many anglers on the water, or even less than that. Now, every lake you go to, not even tournament anglers, every lake is full of people.
It is. You're right. And that's what even makes it more disturbing, is you have more people that are acquiring this technology and getting more adept with it. And it's going to have an impact on the fisheries. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is how many people still keep and eat bass that they catch with that. I've talked to them this year. I see them at the ramps every time. And that's just the one little microcosm of the stuff that's going around all over globally on this.
LiveScope makes it harder on the bass eaters because the fish are becoming more educated. It's harder for Bubba Booey to just go sling a spinnerbait at the bank and fill his bucket.
Yeah, now they're. I talked to three of them that were
bass eaters aren't really going to be that proficient on LiveScope, Brandon.
I talked to three of them at Table Rock this year that were cleaning out limits of Kentucky's that had caught them LiveScoping, laughing about it. So it goes on. I mean, it does.
Well.
But the thing about fishing, what I think a lot of people miss on this, and a lot of the people that are like techie people, that you have got to have some mystery in the sport. If you don't have this whole aspect of the unknown and what's around that next corner that you don't know about, you lose so much of what fishing's about. And most people, they don't give a crap, they don't give a heck about the aesthetic part of fishing. And that's one of the things that I really have a problem with, is how we're losing that. We're losing the value of the aesthetics that come with fishing, the tradition that comes with it. And it's just, and it's not just me. If you look through my comments on my videos, you'll see, real obvious what people's viewpoint is on it.
Yeah, but you do this a lot, and you say, you throw out numbers like 95% of tournaments are won on LiveScope. You say 90% of people hate LiveScope, and you're basing it off a totally biased sample base. Those 28,000 subscribers that left you would have had a different opinion. I've watched a lot of your videos, but, and you pull from this biased sample every time.
There's still a larger percentage, though, of the people that are against that.
So, Randy, let me ask
Swindle
you this.
Sample. Swindle had that poll that he did on it.
That was the most biased sample I've ever seen. He asked his fans who have been listening to his opinion for years what they thought about it. If I go to a trailer park in Alabama and ask them what their thoughts are on Donald Trump, I'm going to get a totally different answer than if I go to a 30-story building in New York and ask them their thoughts. Like, your analytics are way flawed, and if you only had a couple hundred people watching you, it wouldn't be a big deal. But
I can only go by my analytics. I don't. That's the only thing I have to go by. So I do have to go by that.
You can go on DNR creel surveys. Have you ever looked at those, or do you just throw these numbers out there?
For what? What do you mean? What are you talking about? Creel.
Well, surveys? You're always saying fish populations are decimated. You're saying Bassmaster's numbers are down. You're just basing this off your comment section.
They are down. Go out.
That's the biggest classic they've ever had this year, numbers wise.
That's a classic.
And ratings.
That's a classic. That's not a regular tournament viewership.
That's Bassmaster. The Opens have had the biggest ratings they've ever had
this year. Well,
as far as viewership.
In the live scoping tournaments? Because I know that the St. Lawrence and the St. Clair and all that weren't.
Yeah, I mean, have the smallmouth tournaments ever had higher view counts? Does your comment section say anything about that?
Would you rather watch some guys glued at a screen drop shotting, or would you want to watch Keith Poche jump a sandbar to get into backwater if you're a viewer, which is more exciting?
I'd rather watch Keith Poche jump into a backwater, but that doesn't mean it's safe. What if he had a co-angler in that tournament Like, well, we're not going to get into this, but there's a lot of things I'd rather see. I'd rather see a shotgun start off takeoff and 225 boats racing down the lake, as long as I'm not in it. There's a lot of safety concerns and logistics that just aren't reality. And I do agree that the personality of people while they're doing the boring ass live scoping on TV needs to be elevated to grow the sport. And that's my biggest concern, is that it'll get so boring that it'll just fizzle. But you know, that's something that's got to be addressed. And like I said, I agree with some of the things you say, and that's one of them. But I mean, you base your live scope argument on sustainability a lot of the time. You know, pressure is increasing. A lot of people know how to catch fish that they didn't know before, right?
Yeah.
So you make your living off YouTube. YouTube teaches people how to catch fish, where to catch fish. People that never would catch fish before. So how can you stand on your high horse telling people live scope's bad, it's bad for the fishery, when you have 100,000 subscribers and, you know, thousands and thousands of people watching your videos, becoming educated on specific skills that they wouldn't have had access to prior to YouTube?
So I teach them how to fish, not video game fish. There's a difference with that.
Catching is catching, Randy. And if they're eaters, they're eaters. And they're,
it's not the same. It's how you play the game. It is. And that's what a lot of live scopers don't understand, is how you play the game. And when you live scope, you take away so much of the intrinsic value of fishing. You do.
Do you think the intrinsic value of fishing comes from, on a Friday night before you go fishing on Saturday, having to pain through some YouTube videos to learn how to catch them?
It's not.
How's that any different?
If people think fishing is about catching, then they don't understand what fishing is about.
But your tip videos and your lake breakdowns are all about catching.
What do you mean?
I don't see any videos of blue herons or.
That's not. You can't equate lake map breakdowns that show people seasonal patterns where bass are certain times of the year to
live. My live scope doesn't show me that.
That's not the. What are you talking? That doesn't even make any sense. What are you talking about,
Randy? I don't think this is going to go any further. I don't want to hold you up any longer. I appreciate you sticking around for this. You know, I know we put you through the gauntlet a little bit, and that's
well, everybody, you know, has an opinion on it. I'm not that. I mean, you guys love bass fishing. I love bass fishing.
Absolutely. Not,
yeah, that's the whole thing about it. We can have a respectful and civil debate on there. You don't agree with my perspective. I respect that. I don't agree with yours. I got different perspectives, but you still love to fish. And that's the thing that we got to remember out there.
I agree with you. And I do appreciate your opinions throughout the years, whether I agree with them or not, because that, you know, that is how change is affected. If everyone's a yes man and goes along with it, we won't see any improvements. So we'll end it on that common ground. And good luck at Lake of the Ozarks tomorrow.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks for coming on, bud.
Okay, I appreciate it. And I'll keep bashing live scope on the video. So,
all right, we'll be watching.
We'll be watching.
We'll talk later, guys.
Good luck, Randy. Take care.
Good luck.
Holy shit!
What did you do, Brucey?
I was just talking.
Oh my God, where do you think Kyle is? He probably went to bed. He's coming.
Yes,
Brad, it's all you. I gotta get a drink of water.
Dude, okay, go get a drink, Brucey. Me and Kyle run the show.
Brad, I just sat here for an hour and 15 minutes. That was the most excitement I've ever had.
My heart is racing. I mean, I love blocking and his outlook on life, but
no, you know what's funny, Brad, is I actually reached out to him when he posted that that top 10, like, who are these guys? Because I was like, hey man, like, honestly, like, I'm Kyle, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, no, seriously, because I respect him and I do. I respect him. I obviously watched like Bassmasters, Bugs Island on his, and I respect him as an angler, as a person. I think that sometimes I disagree with certain opinions, but that doesn't mean that we don't have the common ground of loving to catch fish and, like, you know, being excited about fishing and, you know, grinding through the sport that is very brutal. And he is right. It is a very, you know, a challenging industry to be in. And so, you know, I reached out to him and I was like, hey, like, I'm actually curious, like, off the record, like, I want to pick your brain on your thoughts on like sort of all the comments that you say, just for my like understanding of like where he's coming from, like the root of all that he discusses, right? Like, why does he have these extremely strong opinions on not only LiveScope, that's, I understand that, but you know, the what Brucey was saying about you have to be rich and like the cuts and all that.
Well, I understand where he's going with it. I take offense to a few things. Like,
I agree.
Telling kids that, you know, you shouldn't do this. Well, maybe that 17-year-old or 18-year-old he's talking about or talking to you and telling not to do it, maybe that kid was Seth Fighter one day, right? Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe that's the next Brandon Polinick.
Yeah, you never know. And that kid that fights his whole life to make it there, like all of us are, like me and Brucey are, like you are, we're going to appreciate it way more and we're going to be way stronger at the end of it than if someone just gave us a credit card and gave us everything we needed to do. And, you know, like, I can't choose how rich my parents are. You can't choose that. Look, I mean, good for them.
Like, that's the thing I wanted to mention is, like, I think a lot of people in this industry, and look, I saved up for a long time. I had this dream when I was like 8 years old, and I got a job. I was pumping gas in Cooperstown, New York all summer, and I worked whenever I could. I got my guide's license. I did guide trips. I saved up a ton, and I saved up a good amount of money. And I was like, I went to my parents and I was like, hey, like, I want to get a bass boat. You know, the local club, Susquehanna Bass Association, they're in Cooperstown, New York. And I would like run down to the dock and they would teach me like how to rig a Texas rig, right? How to, you know, what a Carolina rig was, a crankbait, like the basics, right? And so, you know, I saved up and I got on the back of their boat. My first ever tournament, I fished out of a blue canoe.
Dude,
I built an aerator. I wonder if maybe my mom and dad are watching or someone's watching, they can text a picture, but I was in a blue canoe. I built an aerator in the center, so it like screwed into the sides, and me and my buddy Nick Wigglesworth, we literally fished a tournament out of this blue canoe. And like, that was my start. And I saved long past that, and got like a 40 horsepower bass tracker, that, you know, it was probably like $12,000. I think I saved up. Did my parents give me $4,000 or $5,000? Absolutely. Like, I'm not denying that. And if my parents gave me an unlimited credit card right now, I would say it. And I don't really, does it bother me that I don't necessarily have that? Maybe a little, but I don't judge. There's too many people out there judging people, thinking, oh, like, you know, it's not, you know, ethical or whatever it is that they have what I don't. But I mean,
they ain't never been offered the money.
They've never been offered the money, and they don't realize that you still have to work really, really hard. You can't buy your way to the elites.
No. You can't. Well, back when Randy got in, you could, I guess.
Right. So
yeah.
I think there's a lot of strong opinions.
Well, yeah. I just suck. I mean, I'm on the board for the SATTs. I'm very involved with high school and college angling. Do a lot of seminars for them, help out all our high school kids in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And a lot of these kids, that's the only time they're not staring at a screen or, you know, doing God knows what. Like, I mean, I kind of take offense to it when he's like, you shouldn't go after your dreams. Like, these kids, like, fishing, saving some of these kids' lives.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of being a pro angler is, leaving the sport better than you found it. And like the way he's going about it, he's not very eloquent about doing it. You know, like I understand he probably has good intentions, but he also is, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to make a comment about Randy. I honestly am curious if he'll reach back out to me, because I do want to have an off the record conversation and before I, you know, make a judgment. But yeah, I think, you know, there's a whole lot of hatred right now in the industry without a lot of, not in the industry, sort of about the industry is probably a better way to describe it. There's a lot of people with a lot of opinions, and they don't even know. Like, I've got a ton of, after like that tournament, and like people know I live scope, right? Jamie, yeah. Know you live scope probably more than I live scope, but
nope. I'm a dock skipper now, bud.
But like I get you know, messages on Instagram. People are like, you know, like what, I don't like live scope. Like guys that I know, guys that I, you know, maybe have chatted with a little bit. And my first question always is, do you have a live scope? Have you used one? Have you been on the boat with someone using one? And I'm not going to make up percentages. Majority of the time they say no. And I say, well, before you make a judgment, try using it, try looking at it and see if it helps. Like, I want to know your opinion after using it, not just looking at the top level guy using it. If you watch someone, all those top level guys, Brandon Polinick, Gussie, you know, all any of these guys on the elites and on the opens, when you watch them, it looks easy. It does. And you know, when you watch a major league,
when you watch me with it does not look easy.
What'd you say?
When you watch me with it, it does not look easy.
Right. Like you watch, like, but like the point is, like, when you watch Tiger Woods hit a golf ball, it looks easy, right? And it's like, oh, well, he has the best irons in the game. Like, really? You think that's the reason? I know that's a different comparison, but
that's pretty good, though. Like, it doesn't reflect. I mean, these guys at the top level right now in the elites, opens, winning tournaments with live scope, they put their blood, sweat, and tears into it. I'll guarantee you that. And it's no different than being able to skip a dock like Brucey. I mean, it took him 2 or 3 days to figure that out.
Yeah, especially that big old three quarter ounce jig. That's a tricky one, dude.
Well, he kept banging them pretty hard to make sure the snakes weren't under there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a break.
Come on. Yeah.
But it's good to have you on. We've been rolling with you all year. You're a buddy. I gave you a new nickname, Doc Talk.
Doc Talk.
All your buddies approve of it. Man, we don't know how you, like, the perception of how a person should mentally approach a tournament. You take that rule and bust her in half. Like, you are the most high strung, wired, brain's always going. I've asked you a few times, like, how did you figure this out? And it's crazy to see. And every takeoff, I don't know if you're going to get zero or win. And you've beat me in every tournament this year except for one. And you just won the last one. And I'm like, I thought you're supposed to be cool, calm, and collective. And you have taken that.
Here's,
I
mean, the opposite Iaconelli's of cool, the, calm. Yeah, the opposite of what you're supposed to be.
Iaconelli pulled it off, and you're there. It's few and far between, but you're pulling her off with your approach. It's something else to see, man.
Yeah, no, it's pretty. And it comes with its negatives. Like, you saw it at the Chesapeake Bay. I was so fired up, I could barely, you know, hang, right? Like, I couldn't even land a fish, you know? And it's part, you know, a lot of it's my personality. Like, I'm just high strung. Like, I'm ready to go. I wake up in the morning, no coffee, boom, out of bed, get in the truck. I know someone texted me and said that, Greg Hackney or someone was saying that I must drink like a ton of monsters. Like, no, I just, that's how I'm wired. And I'm also wired to fish. And I think that having those two things on my side, like, I can approach a lake and do a ton of different things on it. Like you were saying, like I'm running up the river, and this is why, and this will tie into why this tournament, you know, I was like, I won this derby was because I was all over that lake. Like I was overwhelmed, as I'm sure a lot of guys were, with that lake. There's 80,000 docks. There's tons of fishable water. Like, you know, the whole lake's fishable. There were fish suspended out in the middle. And you know, I sort of had a few zones, and like, I just ran all over the lake and figured out three key areas, and just, I thought, Brucey, I really did think I was going to struggle. And Brad was like, you sandbagger, like after day one. And I was like, no,
sandbagger.
Man. I was like, no, man, like I only got, and you know how the opens are. Everyone's sticking fish. So you can't really stick fish and feel that confident. Like, sure, if you get a ton of bites, you're going to feel confident, but I wasn't getting that many bites. And it fit well. That tournament fit well for me. And yeah, no, I'm definitely high strung, dude. There's no doubt about it. I just love it. And then like, on top of my personality, Brad and Brucey, I just love fishing so much that like that first year, it actually hurt me how intense my dream is for this, to like this industry and this sport, because it brings like my normal intensity level and times by two, because like I'm just so excited even just to be in the opens. Like when I roll out and launch my bow in practice, talk about fishing with anyone, whether it's a 10-year-old kid, I'm trying to, you know, I signed the guy's hat after the tournament when I held the trophy. I'm just pumped up about it, like all the time.
Yeah, I feel like in the Bassmaster Classic this year, if you make it to day three and have a camera guy, you might just vaporize. Like, that's how jacked up you are. Like, poof, Kyle's gone.
But honestly, I'm a little nervous about it. Like, if I make day three, I'm a little nervous about it for sure.
Oh man, and talking you off the ledge and the bag line was unbelievable at that tournament. Like you had won by like, what'd you win by? 5 pounds or something?
I don't know. No, it wasn't five, because was it Dice K?
Dice K Kita.
Yeah.
I think he had 18, but he is in the big
ones, dude.
It was a lot.
And it was a lot.
Looking at you, I was like, he needs 23 pounds. Like the biggest bag of the tournament is 19-15. And you're like eyeballing everyone's bags and you're just freaking. And it was you got this.
Dude, I was talking to a lot of different people about it. Obviously, my phone was blowing up. My voice is kind of hoarse because of it. But it's just so surreal to me. Like, until you've won, I always knew I could win, right? It's not that, but like it just feels so outlandish and unattainable. Unattainable, exactly. Like I never even remotely thought that it would happen until it does. And now, since it has, and I've sort of let it sink in, but not really, because I'm trying to just get all the media done, get all the, you know, stuff that I have to get done out of the way so I can just focus on Harris Chain. But I feel like a new level of confidence fishing these derbies. Like I only,
you watched them bleed.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Exactly. Like I'm telling you, this is my second year fishing all nine. And this year was a little bit easier because after year one, I sort of figured out the sponsorship and how the sponsorship game and how I wanted to approach it. So I've been a little bit more financially secure this year. That helps, obviously. But I figured out how to relax a little bit more than I was last year. And I figured out sort of, there goes Brad. You know, it's pretty wild. It's just a wild ride, this whole sport. And I can't.
Yeah, man, you got your hands full. You're doing the powerhouse thing. I needed to use you on day two. That's not to do a full battery plug, but this legit happened. Powerhouse made a commitment to travel around with a bunch of batteries, and Kyle's the guy, and left his truck open. And my dumb ass didn't plug in my isolated 16 volt LiveScope battery. Sorry, Randy, cover your ears if you're still listening. And I had to, it lasted all the way up to 1 o'clock, and I had to go change it. And I was rooting through your truck, and there's batteries to the ceiling, and you had your like bed in there. And
yeah, that the batteries, dude, the batteries, believe it or not, I was like, dang, like I have to lug all these things around. And then I was like, I slowly figured out that when I would pull over to like truck stop or like, you know, a safe like on off ramp off the highway to like sleep, dude, it's a nice little like cocoon that it creates. So like when I sleep in that bed, dude, I'm like, oh, like little, like charge my phone up on the battery. So it's pretty awesome. And you know, when I was actually, it's funny, when I was driving home from that win, I was telling you, you know, when we were off air, like I was about to, cause the bed's not ideal. Like it's comfortable, but it's not ideal. And so I'm like about to pull off to a truck stop after this win. And I like was so close. And I just thought, oh my God, I got 50 grand in my bank account. And I like scooted back into the left lane, pedal to the metal. I was like, you know, hotels near me. And like one popped up $180. I was like, send it. And I went right in, and it was just, it was cool. And you know, that's the cool thing about this sport is the highs and the lows. Like it's pretty, it's a pretty wild swing. Like, you know, after leaving the St. Lawrence, you know, it's funny. You were like, Bruce, you were like, let's go. Like,
I went home and bought a hot tub.
Yeah.
I literally did the next day. My back hurt so bad from those, like, even in the big lawn, there was just such a big ride and huge waves and scoping and everything like that. My back and neck hurt so bad. I was like, I got like 18 grand from this. I'm buying a hot tub. But then the next one, you're like, you know, you get 122nd at Watts Bar, like, you're eating gas station chicken wings and sleeping in your truck, boy.
Yep. Yeah.
Didn't you get sick from those wings, Brucey?
Yeah, I never slept the night before day one of Watts Bar.
You're on the porcelain?
Oh, that's probably. Hey, I got a question for you too. So I took a video of you two in your beer chugging competition. Do you care if I post that?
Oh, is that a bad look?
Yeah, you chug a beer with two hands. you had such supreme confidence at it that we put $100 on the table. That was the only way I made money at Watts Bar.
No, we put 80. I only had 80 cash.
Oh, I won 100 off the co-angler, Travis.
Yeah.
I won $200 of cash a check in that derby.
Yeah. Travis got I gave you a run for your money.
I was taking it easy because there was a spill rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, you lost some money. That's fine. You still owe me money from one of them marinas.
I know. I do owe you. I think I owe you like $50 for the food.
Yeah.
I'm financially secure now for like the next maybe 6 months until
we got to tell this story. So Lake of the Ozarks loaded with like wicked restaurants and marinas. Every bay has a restaurant in it. So we're like, whatever. It's back to back. You know, tons of practice, tons of derby, and we're like, we'll just go for lunch for 45 minutes a couple days. And Kyle comes one day, we got Matt Robertson and Luminetti and everything, and Kyle hops out. Only restaurant we could find was like, you know, up top in some fairly nice place. Kyle walks in with no shoes.
Zero shoes, all the way
to the restaurant. We sit down and he goes, dude, I don't have a wallet either. Can you spot me? I was like, yeah, no problem, bud. I got you. Waitress comes around. Can I get 3 Arnold Palmers?
Dude, I'm a huge Arnold Palmer fan.
I know.
Hey, I bought him the burger the night before he won. I should be entitled to like a quarter or half of it.
No, I'll give you $100, Brizzy.
What about me?
I'm Brad. I'm sorry. I said Brad.
Yeah, good Brad.
I'll give you both a hundo.
Oh, thank God. Although
I got to be careful. Like, going from like 3 grand in your bank account to like
53 grand?
53, potentially more, like, you know, with the Phoenix stuff and like all that. Like, I don't know what to do with it. Like,
I'd give it to your girlfriend. Give it to your girlfriend, bud.
Yeah, Caroline's a lot smarter than them.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll do something good. That you'll probably buy like glide baits or something.
Yeah. Glide baits, dude, glide baits scare me, man. Like, I know you caught an 8-pounder in practice on it, but like.
No, it was just a 7. It wasn't an 8.
Oh, it was a 7.
7-2.
7-2.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, no, I need
to put them away.
What?
I'm putting them away for the Open's career because only drop shots work and jigs. That's it.
Drop shots and jigs are pretty dialed in the Opens, dude.
Yeah, you'll be fine with that. Well, I think the Elite Series entry fees are 40 or 45 grand, so.
Isn't it 50? What is it?
I don't know.
I'm not worried about it. I'm probably, you know.
So you got her covered, and then every check you get next year, you can just put it right in your pocket.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't want to jinx it.
Man. You're going to be spun like a top. You're fine. You could probably have one of your worst finishes of the year and still make it.
Yeah, it's possible.
We kind of alluded to the points a little bit earlier. It's so tight for, you know, that, well, pretty, you've got a little bit of a jump. I don't have it pulled up, but
yeah,
you're up there pretty good. And then there's like 10 of us fighting for like four spots after you.
Yeah. I have 1304. Logan Parks is 1294. And then Kyle Austin's 1286. Tyler Williams is 1271 and you're 1263.
And then Wesley Gore is like a point behind me.
Yeah, he's one
point. The next guy's a couple points and she's all stacked up, but at least you got a jump on the boys.
I can picture me and Brucey waiting to put our boats in down in Florida and Kyle will call us and say, what do you think it's going to take cash or check? Yeah. Usually you wait until like the first night, but I think you'll call us at the boat
ramp. No, I'll call you at 8:15 in the morning. Boys, what's it gonna take?
What's it gonna take?
Dude, well, no, it's funny you say that. Like, the only reason I ask you is because like people have to remember that I don't free practice. Like I don't come out. I'm like you, Brucey. Like I'm not saying I'm 8 hours to the U.S. border, because that would just be a lie. But it's a far drive to all these places. And
yeah, way east. There's
last year was my first year fishing any of the lakes on the schedule except for Oneida.
Yeah.
And this year, the only lake I had fished on the entire schedule was the St. Lawrence River. And so, like, St. Lawrence River is my worst finish yet. So I don't know if pre-practice is necessarily like a good thing for me, but I just don't even know. I mean, I know about the weights, but like sometimes these lakes are surprising, especially this year. I mean, it used to be 12 and a half pounds, 13 pounds a day was like, you're pretty solid. And now it's like 14.
Yeah. And you really can't go off the local results anymore. With the exception of the St. Lawrence River, the Opens field has beat a lot of the locals in a lot of the tournaments. Like the top 10 usually has two locals in it, Jack Potters that live there. Like at Watts Bar, and that kind of tripped me up at Watts Bar was, you know, there's that Hunter Boat tournament before it, and there were like 45 zeros out of 93 boats. 7 pounds a day was way up there. 10 pounds a day was in the top 10.
Yeah.
And you come in the Opens and, you know, if you had 10 pounds, you'd be feeling pretty good and you would have been in like 40th. Like it's people, you know, I did have this argument with Randy earlier about home lake advantage, but it's, you know, when you're taking a different look at a lake and using a lot of modern tech and a lot of tricks that you acquire from traveling all over, it's the weights go up. So you definitely can't really err on the side of caution. St. Lawrence River was the exception.
Yeah. That place just
has, we got our asses kicked by guys that know there.
Yeah, for sure. Got smoked. You didn't get ass smoked. I got smoked.
Yeah, I still lost.
That's true. Yeah, no, oh, dude, boy. It's surreal to even like touch like trophy. Like I'm literally like sleeping next to it. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Are you gonna bring it to the house when you crash our house the last night when you make the final day again or no?
Yeah, I'm bringing it.
Raz traveled with his for a couple tournaments afterwards too.
Yeah. No, I'm like this is the first time like I haven't gone back home. And frankly, it was because I won. I'm like, you know what? Like I can afford to eat out for X amount of time. I can you know, crash.
We are missing out, Brucey. He's splurging and we're not near him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's a man on fire.
Yeah, no, it's pretty epic, man. Like, I wonder if this is how, like, yeah, it's crazy to feel like I'm, you know, and this is the first time that I filled up and, like, not checked which gas station was, like, 0.01, like, 1 cent cheaper than the other. I'm just like, yeah, that one's convenient. And I just pull in, fill it up.
It sounds too dangerous. You better get back to being frugal.
Yeah,
you're 50 right. Grand will be gone.
You gotta give me, dude, you gotta give me like a week. Come on. I need to pretend like, you know, a big shot for a little bit.
Yeah, let her fly.
Yeah.
But no, everyone that's can compete in tournaments is a rich kid. And
yeah, no, yeah. I'm exactly, dude. Look, I get it from their perspective. I understand how they could have that opinion, but it's wrong. That's plain and simple. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not true. Like, there are plenty of people out here, and you said it yourself. Like, you, like, couldn't afford to play basketball, right? You're out here doing it.
I sucked anyway.
Yeah. Like, you're in the top 10, it's a lot of hate, man. But it's just
it's easy to hate when you're not doing good. Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
That's why.
No, and that's why we do things like this too, like to, you know, give someone a little bit of an insight into how it actually looks. Cause it's really easy to say, well, this guy's only doing good because he buys waypoints. Well, it's still work to go, like, one of the guys doing well on the points, I think he had 290 days on the water last year. I don't know if I would put 290 days on the water if I didn't have a job and had unlimited money.
Right.
Like, that is grinding. That's giving up a lot of things. That's working your ass off. So whether you have the, you know, the financial cushion or not, it's still, that's kind of the beauty of the sport. Like, it all levels out. It's the whoever wants it most and has the, you know, the mindset and the skill is going to come through in the end. That's why it's so dynamic at the top of the sport.
That's why people have certain skills that others don't. There's all kinds of different techniques to catch them. There's certain guys that know different bodies of water. There's so many things. And it all boils down to, you know, I think the three biggest things are being likable and, like, not being, you know, so opinionated that you can't get along with people. I think it's adding value to sponsors and people around you too. Like, you know, no, like, having a group of people that you're friends with, whether that's at the club level, you know, regional level, you know, national level, like, having close buds and, you know, giving them value, like, with a friendship, like, or with whatever it may be, is super important. And then obviously putting in the work, like, those three things, I think, is a recipe for success in the industry, because, you know, you need friends, you need, like, a group of guys that, you know, you can rely on if something happens, or if, you know, need something. You need sponsors for the most part, because it's, as you guys know, it's extremely expensive. And then, you know, you need to work hard, because if you're not working hard, you're going to get beat by someone who is. And that's just a fact.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, people don't point out, there's a lot of people with unlimited income that are not doing well.
Correct. A lot of them.
Unlimited resources, full pre-practice on every derby, getting their arses kicked. So, yeah,
100%.
You're right there. And I think adding that little extra grind, like, you know, you do stuff for Powerhouse and Douglas and you're active, and it's, you know, it's an extra step, but it kind of makes you a little bit tougher in the end too.
Yeah, I did too.
You can balance a little bit better if something comes up. You know, issues on the road that are going to happen, then, you know, it's just part of it. You've already allotted a certain amount of time to doing other things instead of just fishing, that you can handle it. So
we're
pulling for you, bud. It's, I, you know, I'm fully confident you're going to make it. And, it's going to be fun to watch the rest of us claw for those four spots.
Oh, come on. Dude, I'll be clawing, man. Don't even say I won't.
Where are you going to go fishing? Are you going to go to Toho or something down there?
Yeah. You know, I on the topic of working, I have one of my good buddies, Billy Gilbert. He's a, you know, fisherman, a good one, and he like helps support. He is my boss for the medical sales side of things. So I have to do some stuff there. Obviously I'll be on some podcasts and, you know, having to, you know, read a bunch of stuff to proofread it and, make some cold calls. That's always epic. And then, but yeah, like, you know, I'll take a few days here and there, right? 'Cause I do think in Florida, especially, it's helpful to get out and kind of get acclimated to these Florida strain fish. I think it's a totally different game. Florida fishing, I've had one good tournament at Harris, and that was the Bassmaster Team Championship back in the day. I don't think they have those stats like as part of your like Bassmaster profile. I believe I finished 14th or 15th in 2020. It was like 160 boats, like the team deal. Yeah, totally it. Different time of the year in December, but you know, I like the lake. I think it'll set up well, but you know, those Florida fish can burn you like big time. So it'll be good just to get acclimated with that. And, you know,
it's going to be fun to watch guys, like, cause there are people in the top 10 that are going to, whether they're doing it consciously or not, are going to try to just catch a limit and just make it. And that limit could be 7 pounds in Florida, and the 10 people behind them could literally have a 6 to 8 pounder.
Yep.
It's the craziest place to end the season. The single craziest lake of all of them to end on.
I'm telling you, man, that's why I don't like when you're like, oh, I'm confident you'll make it. Well, dude, I got to catch them. Like, I got to catch. I have to catch 14 plus pounds a day, I think. That might be
weird. Nuts. That's a good target to have.
I'm just putting it in my mind. Okay. Like,
lock it in. Lock it in.
Yeah. That's what I'm putting out there.
Doc talking.
Yep.
All right, bud.
You know, it's crazy.
Anything else you want to say before we hit the bricks here?
No, man. That was a wild 2 hours.
yeah, you picked a crazy one to win.
Keep my eyes open.
Dude, when you pulled me in, I was just like, wow, that was just incredible. And Jamie, I thought you did a really good job, honestly. And Brad. But no, I just appreciate you guys having me on. It's exciting to be in this position. I'm just gonna put the head down and focus on Harris Chain, and I'll see you boys in a couple weeks.
Yeah, follow him at KGP Fishing on Instagram. Reels are funny as shit. He's got the best reel game going. Check him out and check out the points race at Harris Chain in under a couple weeks here.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Excited.
All right, bud.
Well, take care. Thanks a lot, Kyle, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Later. Yeah. Later.
What do you figure, Brad?
It's time for another. I might go to the Aussie O.
The Aussie O.
Yep.
Yeah. It's dinner time.
It's dinner time, bud.
Okay. All right.
Good night, buddy. I'll see you. I'll call you tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks, Bass Galaxy, for tuning in.
Thanks, Pat.
Oh, we got cut off, Ginge.
Ginge,
we were doing plugs. We were plugging ourselves. Check out Get the Net podcast, Jamie Bruce Fishing and Brad Leutner Fishing. That's how you spell it, not how you say it. It's Brad Leutner.
And you bastard.
We'll see you guys at the next one for the Bassmaster Opens wrap-up show. There's going to be some tears and some celebrations, and it's going to be a good one.
And thanks, Ginge, for doing an awesome job, and thanks, Pat, for the opportunity. See you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Dance.
No, just kidding. This is Pat. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to StrayCast on iTunes and leave a review. Tell us what you think. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening. Peace.